Turn your mics on.
Not terrible.
Homeschooling?
No, she told me. She told me about probably 2 months ago. She said, we were walking through Costco grocery shop, and she goes, I want to go back to school. And I said,
and
well.
She's doing okay?
Yeah, and I just said, Addie, that's going to take some time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to school, and I heard a parent say once, who's in a similar situation, don't accept anything.
Mm-hmm.
Expect, you know, mm-hmm. have expectations for your child and their education.
Mm-hmm.
Don't accept what they're willing to give you, what mm-hmm. the educators mm-hmm. are willing to give you.
Yep. Yep.
And so I did. I went in there and I said, this is what I need. This is what she mm-hmm. needs. Mm-hmm. And if you can't do it, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But I need you to be upfront with me. And I put together a PowerPoint and just educated everybody as much as
great.
I could.
Super.
And
good.
And she has an aide with her all day.
Good.
So that's the good news.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wonderful. Lovely.
Hello?
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 Oh, yes.
Can you hear me? Oh, yeah, we can hear me now.
You can
we
hear
can
you
hear
now.
You.
You can hear you now. Everybody can hear everybody?
You're yeah. recording this on the computer?
I am. We've gone through about 5 or 6 different ways to record it.
Mm-hmm.
GarageBand?
I'm doing GarageBand.
Yeah,
that's right.
GarageBand's good.
This is the one that I've landed on, and I like it very much. And I did not count how many times this is you've been on the podcast. You got 6 or 7, I think, right?
Thanks.
Possibly.
7?
Possibly. Yeah, that's good.
Sounds right.
It's an honor for me.
Yeah, I think this is the most.
Oh, yeah, oh, for far and away the most.
Far and away the most, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think Bob Schneider's been on twice. There's a lot of 2-time clubs, but no.
Mm-hmm.
There's the Dr. Will level, I don't think.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's elite.
I'm here to serve.
All right. Well, let's do this, and we'll... nothing.
You're so good at this.
Well, I didn't check. I just went ahead with my...
You can, but you're such a good editor now that it's okay.
Well.
No? You're a terrible editor.
I'm learning all sorts of things about my garage band. I don't do well reading books and learning stuff that way. I need to do it.
Or be shown.
Or be shown. Yeah,
yeah, I prefer that too.
So I'm just like, I fiddled with this the GarageBand long enough now that I sort of kind of know what's going on. Yeah. Hi, welcome back to the podcast. I'm Chick McGee. That's Jess.
Yes.
Hello.
Hello.
And our guest today, obviously our favorite guest ever. Here he is. It's Dr. Will Miller.
The Honorable Doctor.
The Honorable Doctor.
It's a privilege for me to be here.
How many? You're a doctor of psychology?
It's kind of complicated. I'm a health psychologist. And a health psychologist, a lot of people, when they hear a psychologist, they think about a clinical psychologist.
Right.
Those are the guys who testify in court and say, yes, he's crazy.
You can make quite a nice living off that, can't you?
Oh, a clinical? Yeah. Okay. Because you can testify in court. You can be hired to testify in court, you know, and you're licensed and all that. Mine is health psychology, which is stress and coping. That's my specialty.
Gotcha.
Stress and coping.
Is clinical, do they prescribe?
In some states, they allow them to.
They do?
It's almost like psychiatry light.
Right. Okay.
You know?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Psychiatry's. The field is pretty wacky because it used to be that psychiatrists also did a lot of psychotherapy.
Mm-hmm.
But over time, psychiatrists now more and more are dealing with the severely mentally ill and doing, drug prescriptions. I mean, mm-hmm. anyone who lives in a town anywhere in America has a population of people struggling with the tragedy of, say, schizophrenia, for example. Mm-hmm. And the psychiatrists in that town,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're the people who are doing that. So fewer and fewer do psychotherapy. And now the psychologists, even they're doing a lot more research. A lot of psychotherapy is done by clinical social workers, licensed clinical social workers, or
That's psychotherapy.
That's psychotherapy, yeah,
okay,
exactly.
Okay.
And they're the ones you typically go to see. And mm-hmm. they're trained more to do that. Yeah. So I'm a health psychologist. I teach. I teach at Purdue, and so.
You're a chaplain too, right?
Yes. You know what? To tell you the truth, it's like that's the title I'm with the police for is chaplain.
Mm-hmm.
But really, what I am there for is as a health psychologist.
Right.
Stress and coping. You know, I do training on stress and all that stuff. So
you train the staff. The first responders, is that what you do?
I work with them, police and first responders, firefighters, mm-hmm. for example, about how they can cope with their stressful job. And especially for police officers, it's amazing. The term that's used with law enforcement is called hypervigilance. Mm-hmm. And anyone out there, and I know you have a lot of first responders who listen and love, you guys and listen to the show. First responders, especially police officers, struggle with hypervigilance, which means if you're on your shift for 8 or 12 hours, even when you're between calls,
mm-hmm.
you're vigilant. Your mm-hmm. system is elevated. And that's extremely stressful on the body. What happens then is that when you go off shift and you go home, they call it the magic chair, that you just go home and you just like veg out in the chair.
Right.
We all can relate to that. If you have a job, hello, you can relate
to
that. Absolutely.
I was just thinking, and I'm trying not to make this visit about Jess or I. We're going to talk about other stuff. But that reminds me, because when I get... Someone will be very nice wherever I am, and they'll go, "Hey, do you remember what you said this morning? That was so..." And I go, "I have no idea."
No, it's true.
I don't remember.
In other words, you too. And no, the analogy is spot on. You have a job where you are relentlessly engaged,
and I go home and I collapse in my chair for at least 15-20 minutes, I don't listen to anything in the car driving home.
Yep.
And the other point is like when I'm here, I am hypervigilant.
Yep.
But then I find the days that I feel the worst are because people, you must show preparation and you sit down.
You have riders.
And I'm like, I'm really not, I'm always like watching and looking and thinking and mm-hmm. something will trigger mm-hmm. something and I'll go, I'll use that tomorrow, whatever. So it does get, and I'm
No, the analogy is completely apt, relentless hypervigilance.
Mm-hmm.
The consequence of that is when you get off there, you crash. And that's why relationships are difficult in fields that demand that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So,
well, you know what? I'm talking about her like she's not here.
That's okay. Go ahead. I'll check out.
She's taking a look. She's taking a look.
She is here and she's very cute.
Oh, thanks.
She's something else.
Girl. Okay. Go ahead.
She just got a copy of The Artist Way, which at a point in my life I found very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And even to this day, I try to, and I don't do it every day, but I try to get up. It's called Morning Pages.
Mm-hmm.
And you get up and you write a little something every morning.
Yep. Yep.
And actually, I had gotten away from it entirely until I heard Bill Schaft, who was a writer for the David Letterman Show, and he'd been with him for 30 years.
Yeah, I know Bill. I worked with him as a comedian.
He's a stand-up comedian, and he was being interviewed by Marc Maron on Maron's podcast, and Schaft said that just really gets me going for the day. The creative churning starts because if I don't do it, I'm just kind of stagnant for the rest of the day.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't matter what you write. You just get up and write I think it's 3 pages or whatever they recommend.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And that's really helped me recently with,
The thing that's blown my mind recently in my field is the research, the brain research on the generic term is mindfulness, but it's
mm-hmm.
really meditation,
yeah.
some form of meditation practice. Now, I do TM, I do transcendental mm-hmm. meditation. And one of the reasons I like TM is although it's expensive to start, it's like $1,000 to start. I wish they wouldn't charge that much, but whatever. What I like about that is it really pushes you to do it twice a day. And the repeating practice, the regular practice. Sally and I do it together.
Mm-hmm. You do it together?
Yeah, we do it together.
Nice.
Yeah. And it has amazing accumulative effects over time. First of all, lowers your blood pressure.
Yeah,
We were just talking on the phone.
So here's what happened this morning, because I have started a meditation practice, and I actually use an app. It's called the Insight Timer.
Yeah,
and it has a bunch of either you can have someone talk you through it, or there's music, or
mm-hmm.
there's what do they call those? Like a song bowl.
Mm-hmm.
They use those a lot. But I kind of got away from my routine for about 4 days. It just got hectic, And so this morning I woke up and I was in a terrible mood.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know what? This, I probably should.
One of the things that's amazing, Jess, is that the research is showing. In other words, when people say you meditate and they say, well, okay, so it seems intuitive, like, okay, if I meditate for 15, 20 minutes, whatever,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to relax during those 20 minutes and then it probably will help me through the day. Well, sure.
Mm-hmm.
But what the research is showing is that when you meditate regularly, mm-hmm. morning and afternoon or whatever,
right.
If missing a day or two is no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But the accumulating effects over time change you over time. I just read about a study about one of the things they can measure is the amount of gray matter in your brain.
Yes. Mm. Yeah.
And long-term meditators, they had 50-year-olds, and they had as much gray matter as a 25-year-old.
Yeah.
There was not only
for someone who's meditating.
That's right. You know. Exactly.
Regularly.
So
wow.
It's really worthwhile practicing, especially if you're really smart. Hello, check the two of you. hyper focused. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you don't have attention deficit, you're in a career that almost pulls it out of you,
right.
Just the distractions of, mm-hmm. Family stuff, mothering stuff, fathering stuff, work stuff, etc. It really has a real great effect on you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's good.
I found that you literally have to practice meditation.
Yes.
Yes, it's for me. So if I was out 4 days, I feel like it's going to take me half as long to get back to where mm-hmm. I was 4 days ago. Does mm-hmm. that make sense? Like I have to kind of work my way back up. And I was like, oh, every morning it'll set it for the day. Well, it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. And I'm with you. Like before things start up again around 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening and you get that evening rush,
you
need to meditate again.
And it has an altering effect on your
mm-hmm.
personality.
Mm-hmm.
And so... just giving yourself, and of course the health impact is amazing.
That's huge in itself. Because actually, I just did a presentation on yoga and epilepsy for my yoga class.
Cool.
Yeah, I didn't know. Did I tell you that I'm getting my yoga teacher certificate?
I had heard from
you
Chick.
Heard that.
That's fantastic.
So
I
that's
love
what
it.
I'm doing, and you have to do a presentation, and actually, my teacher asked. She said we've never had anybody do epilepsy.
Yeah.
And since it's close to you, maybe you should do it. And I said okay. So. Found a lot of really great information and also found where there's some forms, TM actually, mm-hmm. where it could possibly not be beneficial to be that deep in a meditative state.
That's exactly right. That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was interesting,
right.
Very interesting. But we've been to so many different kinds of doctors looking for answers for Addie. And I've even gone to the extreme of psychics.
Mm-hmm.
Just because when you hit a low like that and there's no answers, you try
everything.
Anything.
Yeah.
And talk about hypervigilance as far as
you and
being aware mm-hmm. of where
my body's never relaxed.
She is
it
at
wasn't
all times.
Before.
Right,
but
right.
We went to a DO and he very, and I don't mean this in a negative way, very nonchalant, just very like mm-hmm. he's seen everything and
sure.
what, and I'm like, this is my baby. You're going to have to take this more seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And, so he's on her and Addie's smiling and she loves a guy, never met him before. And he did some really great things for her. And then, just kind of still working on her and osteopathic medicine is whole body healing.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is connected. And so he kind of looks up at me and he said, you're going to need to check yourself. And I said, do what?
You motherfucker, what?
Yeah,
what'd you say?
What'd you say to me?
What'd you say to me?
I think you need to check yourself.
Yeah.
And he said, mm-hmm. And so he's like, he goes, really, you need to work on your energy. It's affecting your daughter. And that was a year ago. And I was like, whatever.
Yeah.
And then a couple months ago when I got into meditation, I've honestly seen a huge change.
Yeah.
Huge
yes.
change
yep.
in
yep.
Addie.
Yep.
Huge.
Yeah.
And it's not even that her seizures have decreased, but...
well, you said she's more aware of them, and
she's becoming more aware. She's not so worried about if I'm there, and
yes.
she's able to verbalize more. And actually, but it's and I don't want to say quality of life, but I am going to say quality of life between seizures. Her
right.
ability to bounce back after one,
And I'd never heard...
It's huge.
You were very excited one day. You called me and said... I think she might be aware that when a seizure is going to happen,
mm-hmm.
or she. So, And she wasn't.
She was in the pantry, and she goes, "Hey, I'm having a seizure in here."
Got a seizure over here.
Yeah, and I said, okay. And she was able to talk through it, and that was the first time that ever happened.
Wow.
Yeah, it was huge.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it just makes sense, you know, if you think about it, just like the energy that comes off a person. Mm-hmm. And I mean, yes, sometimes the rhetoric is unhelpful. Oh, energy, whatever. No.
Right.
No, seriously, like just, you know, if you're a skeptic, just sit down and shut up and listen.
You feel that energy?
The intensity that comes off of you, very often it's a very positive kind of energy that a person mm-hmm. will emit, mm-hmm. right? And you're happy to be around them. They're like a, you know, enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. But, you know, giving yourself rest from energy mm-hmm. is an important part of balancing your life. Your work very oftentimes doesn't allow you to have rest from your energy. Your energy is your work.
Mm-hmm.
But then between it, to what degree are you giving your body resuscitation? Mm-hmm. And anything that requires hypervigilance. And of course, it would be totally natural for you mm-hmm. to be hypervigilant, the way we were talking about police officers being
right.
hypervigilant, mm-hmm. even between calls,
yeah.
between episodes. Mm-hmm. You ain't relaxing.
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah, I can't imagine a more vigilant situation than a mother looking after
yes.
her daughter. I mean,
yeah.
I understand that police
well, you have that
risk
mom,
their lives.
I mean,
but for
police officers and first responders and firemen, that's they're not doing it for their child. They're doing it for an entire community.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I have to watch one kid. They have a lot of people.
There's many, know? Many reasons why I'm not a policeman. And that's probably, yeah, right there.
Would you ever do a ride-along?
I would love to do a ride-along.
Would you really?
I found I'm getting back into Cops, I think. I like the TV show Cops.
Yeah, that's the same. That's totally the same.
You know? I think that would be good for you to do a ride-along because you could be a really helpful advocate on behalf of police officers who really, I mean, the reputation
there
of police.
Are,
and
yeah.
there's been and it's well-deserved when there's been bad repute. You
certainly.
Know, the stuff that you see.
Yeah,
I mean, not everything is bad about the new
you know
camera
what?
Era.
And the
no.
thing that you're mm-hmm. that reminds me is that the world, and I'm sorry if you believe this, but in my opinion, I think you're wrong. The world is certainly not black and white. There are a bazillion, and there are no – there. It's not – you can't make the blanket statement all cops are bad. All minority teens are bad. All mm-hmm. you know. I mean, it's mm-hmm. just every situation is different. And
absolutely.
I don't want to sound like a telethon, but I think everybody deserves a break about this
absolutely.
Whole thing and violence
mm-hmm.
and.
Yep.
And
yep.
I remember where I was with the first one that was, I guess, total really off the chart with the Rodney King situation.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
In Los Angeles, and that was you know insane. But sure enough, I mean, yes, those were bad policemen, but Rodney had been in. Trouble over and over again, and has since mm-hmm. been in trouble. And
now he's dead.
Oh wait, yeah, okay, but before, right up until.
But he's the one who said at the end, he goes, "Can't we all just
can't
get
we
along?
Can't we all just get along?" What year was that? Because I remember my parents.
1989.
Okay, my parents were fighting, and
Did
I was
you,
in another
you,
room.
You
and,
smart mouth, come
yeah,
over.
Yeah, and I just came out there. And I said, "Can't we all just get along?" Because I had heard it so much at that time, and wow, it did not go over well. It was probably the first time one of my jokes died.
No,
yes, that was my first dead joke experience. Just fell flat.
No, you know what? No, that's a bad audience.
Yeah, it's
that's
a bad
audience.
That's
now
true.
The joke
that's
is fine.
So you know, this is circling around to what I thought about when I drove to get let the girls out. What is? And I know this is certainly not been said before. It has been said before, but I think it really applies now. But maybe it's because it applies to me. I've never worried so much about. The declining morality of our youth and mm-hmm. society in general mm-hmm. in my life.
Yep.
And this situation reminded me of it. I went to see this movie yesterday called Spy with Melissa McCarthy. It's just come out and I love her and she's very funny. And I felt like the movie was disappointing. But this movie, it had, I don't know how many fucks in it. It had four or five close-ups of the male erect penis.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not... a prude,
mm-hmm.
but I can remember when there were one of the problems that movie studios were like, well, we can't have this an R rating because that'll cut down on our,
mm-hmm.
you can't sell tickets to an R rated movie.
And now it needs to be R rated or
now,
nobody wants to see it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I just, is that the case that society is just going downhill or am I being an unreasonable, craggy,
Well, what was the big deal when you were what was an R movie when you were a kid, when you were a teenager?
Oh, gosh. Well, A Clockwork Orange was nominated for Best Picture with Malcolm McDowell, directed by Stanley Kubrick. And it, when it first came out, it was rated X.
Yes.
It was like an NC-17.
Really?
Because of violence and sex and things like that. And it, as far as sexual situations, it was pretty much the same as the Melissa McCarthy movie, only it was... Clockwork Orange is a lot more violent, and it's set in the future when society is more violent, and there are all these horrible things going on. Certainly,
is that the guy with the eyelash and the
okay, that's exactly right. That's Malcolm McDowell.
The guy with the eyelash,
eyelash and the hat.
This is an incredibly interesting topic because here's the thing.
You've heard that the sign of age is worrying about the declining morality.
Right, that's right.
Every
right.
generation has this. Those those beatniks, those hippies, those punks. But I've never, and I've tried not to do that because first of all, I don't want to get any older. But I try to be reasonable. But I really do feel like things are kind of sort of. Out of control a little bit.
My colleague and co-author, Glenn Sparks, who's a professor at Purdue, and he's one of the country's leading authorities on media effects, what all this is doing to us.
Okay.
And he will suggest that at least a big part of the story is that we're more aware of it. That, in other words, we hear stories. And
everything
we
is
see,
everywhere, all every, the
that's
time.
That's right. And so there are murders and mayhem and awful things that are going on that we would never have heard about 30 years ago at all. And now we hear about everything. And we have this lurid curiosity where we gravitate toward the worst stuff. Mm-hmm. So what's hard to measure is the society as a whole diminishing. And, you know, there's an argument to be made. No, it's really just that, you know, media is affecting us and like loosening our sense of boundaries. Then on the other hand, it's like you talk to, you know, I speak to corporations a lot and you talk to corporations and they have a lot of complaints about the millennial generation, the generation that grew up swamped in media images. And it's like, hey, anything goes, everything goes. And it's all about me, et cetera. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of complaining about their work ethic. They don't show up in time. They're lazy. They're entitled. They're all of those cliches that it's a generational, a defective generation, actually.
Well, and I will tell you this. I talked to my daughter a couple of days ago, and I, you know.
Would she be considered, would your kids?
Well, she's 22, so.
Your younger ones?
She would be a millennial,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I think it's like from like 1980 to.
You know. But I don't want to, you know, say she's the greatest kid in the world, but she is my daughter. But she was, I said, you know, how are things going? She goes, well, they told me to be at work between 9 and 10. And I go, what? And she goes, yeah, I thought that was weird too. Like, I don't have to be there at 9. I don't have to be there at 8:30. They go, you know, between 9 and 10, anytime. And I guess that's a tiny thing, but it gets back to what you're, you know, I'm late, I'm there, I'm not, hang on. You know, I'll be there when I look for me when you see me coming.
But that's also
like that.
Maybe that it's an internship, so they want to see what she's going to do.
Yeah.
Is she going to come at 9 or is she going to come at 10?
See, I never thought of that. Yeah. I, as a good father, I should text her and go, you should be at 8:59 every single morning and don't be late.
And chick was like, well, maybe one morning you're tired.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I was never one of those guys like, well, things are going to hell in a handbasket.
We're just on my podcast, drwill.com, we interviewed, Glenn and I interviewed this guy, the scholar from Belgium, and he moved his family to have a temporary professorship here in the U.S., and he's from Belgium.
Okay.
And he said his kids were amazed when they came to the U.S. Yeah. because everything they saw was predicted by watching Nickelodeon. In other words, their exposure on TV in Belgium, and they couldn't believe, wow, a yellow school bus. It was almost like a cliche, and they actually saw a yellow school bus.
Yeah.
But then, of course, the dark side of that is our fascination with guns.
Yes.
So that's a part of this that truly bothers me at my age, and that is our propensity for horrible violence.
Well, and you're always hearing about, like, Jess lives over on the east side, and I did too for a time, and we still have friends over there, and this is never, he tweeted about this. A friend of ours had somebody try to climb through a window into their home or something like,
home invasion. That's right. You know, heroin's out of control. I mean, so, you know, there really are some disturbing things, and it's, you know, when you don't feel safe, It's really bad because we all get defensive and, you know, it's guns. And
so what do you think's going to, what is it going to take for everyone to, I guess, calm down and be nicer to each other? Or is that even a valid question? Or does it have an answer? Or and what about the screen time?
Yeah.
In your face.
That, you know, your phone and your,
mm-hmm.
your
in the past, and... in the past, historically, it's when, I hate to say it, but when there's been some natural or national catastrophe that has hyper-focused collective attention on that event.
Well, you know, they say that about the Kennedy assassination.
Yes.
It was like it was almost make-believe. Our society was that beautiful, the white picket fence and suburb was overrun, and everyone, the unbelievable prosperity, and Kennedy, a young, vibrant president, and his beautiful wife, and they're in the White House. And then, but the thinking is, if that hadn't happened, it was something like that
had to happen.
Had to happen in order for us to be real, I guess.
Go back even earlier in history. Now, early in history, okay, we're talking about your grandparents or your great-grandparents, either way. You know, the country was in a profound, scared-to-death depression from like 1929 right through 1940, you know, with the war. And then all of a sudden, it was just like malaise, you know, nothing, and Roosevelt and whatever. And then all of a sudden, Nazi Germany and Pearl Harbor, and overnight, zip, the collective awareness cohered, congealed into this mission.
Right.
And they went off to do it. That's the greatest generation. And then they came back from the war so thrilled and happy. So we haven't had, you know, 9/11 gave a piece of it.
I was going to say, yeah, that kind of galvanized us.
I know, but that's so far away now that now everybody's just so selfish.
So that's what I'm saying. Do we need another? I mean, waiting for something to happen? And and it will be a series of small awful things like Ferguson and you know,
Sandy Hooks. Like the days after that, everybody was just.
Right.
I know, and I'm not being disrespectful. Everybody was just chill.
Yeah.
Like the nation was quiet.
Sally and I lived in New York, you know, at 9/11. And it was like overnight, it was like, this stunned shock silence.
Yeah.
And so what is it that compels change? And what compels change is something that kind of is visited upon you. I think it's why we like disaster movies in some way. You know, San Andreas, it's like fascinated by how would that feel? How would we be? So you don't want to invite a disaster. You hope optimistically that a series of small, the very thing you're talking about, Chick, it's like, man, I'm just getting really like tired of, you know, the violence and the lack of morality and the lack of respect. And it's like, at what point do you turn that around? You know, one way that's happened in the past is young parents, sweetie pie, look out and say, I don't want my kid to be that. I don't want that to be the set of values that, you know, I raise my kids with. And you know, when that happens collectively, then you have a movement.
Yeah.
And that movement, in fact, turns around, you know, societies. Unless we all blow up in a nuclear.
Well, we were a group of girlfriends and I get together and we call it First Thursday Girls. We get together the first Thursday of every month.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And we were talking and it's I live in the town that I grew up in. And there's 8 or 9 of us, and I think it's about 50-50. Like, some of them moved to different communities, and it's just like, oh, I can't imagine still living in our hometown, and the gossip, and the da-da-da, and it's just like, that's going to be any town you move to.
Yes.
But so I brought up, what about moving out of our country?
Yeah.
Would I still feel the way I feel about the United States if I moved to Canada, or if I don't know.
Or France or
wherever.
Belgium.
Is it the same there? That's what I want to know.
Well,
isn't it true that there are certain qualities that every human being has no matter where you...
For sure.
Yeah, I mean, you might think differently.
Maybe think about the word. There are certain fundamental principles about human behavior that... See... I think there's a myth in our society and in our pop psychology that we change from the inside out. Like you go, you know, you tinker inside yourself and you change. Actually, we really change from the outside in. We're adaptive creatures. It's evolution. In other words, here's a little mind game.
Okay.
I think you'll enjoy this.
I love mind games.
All right. So let's say the three of us were suddenly kidnapped right now.
Okay.
And we were taken out of here, put into a jet, blindfolded, and we were flown to like, you know, some
Argentina.
Do you watch Scandal too?
No, is that, are we? Am I, yeah. am I, okay, good. Argentina's too sort of built up. Well, no, it's not a bit. That's not a bad idea. Okay, so we get parachuted in there, and we're told, forget it, you're never going back. You have to live the rest of your life here.
Yeah.
Well, what would happen? The first day we'd be in shock, the first couple of weeks, blah, blah, blah. Come back and visit us 3 years from now.
Right.
We'd be speaking the language. We would have made friends. We would be eating the food. We would be connecting with people.
That's one of my favorite scenes in movies. It's in Castaway when Tom Hanks is trying to keep everything together that he can once he gets to that island. And he slowly but surely, you know, like I think the last scene before he becomes totally adapted and a certified badass and living on an island and not only surviving but thriving, he has to take that ice skate and knock that tooth out of his head.
That's right.
And then the screen goes black, and then it's...
Next thing you see, the spear through the fish.
The spear through the water and the fish.
Dead
you stand
eyes
him, and he's just he's just totally, you know, fine with being on the island for the rest of his life.
So now come back to what we're talking about, and the fact of the matter is we adapt to whatever circumstance we're in. I love that you said this first Friday, because when Sally and I moved, you'll love the story, we moved from New York City to here, to Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
And so we both knew, well, we have to get connected. And so Sally got connected with a couple of women friends in our neighborhood, who I think were teachers or whatever, and she got invited to join this group on Friday. So it was about eight women, and it originally began as a women's Bible study years ago, and within 5 years devolved into Friday drinks,
and they
call
right.
it they call it Frinks.
Frinks. Ooh, that's good.
Frinks. And so Frinks has been meeting for 20 years.
She's always said, "Well, every first Thursday of every month, I get together and we have play cards.
We play cards. We've never played cards." It's almost 2 years we've never played cards.
Absolutely. Yeah. But those people become, over time, your family.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, and refrigerator. You know, refrigerator rice, la la la, is coming out. It's being, as a matter of fact, we're just finishing it. It's being updated and coming out again.
DrWill.com.
DrWill.com. For all your psychological needs. DrWill.com. And anyway, so yeah, refrigerator is coming back out. But it came out, God, this book came out right at 9/11. And we lost all of our publicity.
Right.
And so, but the editor called up from New York and she said, you know what? This is more relevant than it's ever been. Mm-hmm. And so let's update it, refresh the data. And so it's coming out. But that's the premise of this idea. Between moving and then giving yourself over to media, people have a lot of acquaintances, but they don't have people who feel like brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers, et cetera. And that's what keeps you healthy.
Is the family you create? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Sally uses the phrase, and I like it. She said, actually, what people need to do is kind of rethink it and say, okay, well, I don't live anywhere near my family, but I have a lot of friends. Okay, let's reset. Your family, friends are family. Your friends are your family. When you orient yourself, it's the same crazy soap opera lunatic collection as your own family, your friends, right?
Everyone has a role.
That's right. That's right. And it's right.
Yeah, so, it's true. I think that that's why I have this fantasy, this daydream of Friends, the show Friends,
because
I grew up watching it, and I was like, oh wow, they don't have to hang out with their family at all. They just like each other,
They
come in and out of their apartments, and they get in the refrigerator, and they just
Seinfeld was interesting because they were completely like. They didn't get along in a lot. They were not compatible in a lot of ways, but yet they had gone past that, just like family, and they were in each other's lives completely.
Yeah.
Your health is in your health is in your relationships, really. Well, that sounds kind of like real obvious. Like, well, thank you very much for that insight. I'm going to rephrase it. You change most effectively to the degree that you have positive relationships and friendships in your life, and more than just your significant other. See, that's one of the other problems with the U.S. I say that in my speech all the time. Look, psychology 101, one person can't handle the whole load of you, and you have no business presuming you're the sustenance for another person. It's a lot of the reasons. I would talk about, you know, I've been a shrink for a long time, and so when couples come for therapy, They're not there for a tune-up. They're ready to kill each other usually. Right. And
they should have been there 10 years ago.
Exactly.
No one has that much foresight. Right.
Right. And it's almost like a last gasp, well, you know, a concession. We'll go to a therapist.
Right.
And they all tell the same story because I make them start this way. Well, when it started, of course, we fell in love. It was really good then. I mean, mm-hmm. no one ever once came in and said, nah, pretty much sucked right out of the gate. You know, no.
I hung in there hoping it would get better. It never did.
It didn't. And what started out great slowly corroded. Eroded and mm-hmm. deteriorated, and right. but guess what? What in a high percentage of cases was there pathology in the relationship? Sometimes, sure, okay, you know, whatever. Overwhelmingly, however, it was the restlessness that comes when you're trying to depend on one other person.
Mm-hmm.
And you get restless. It's just you're not designed for that. And the women didn't have women who were like sisters. The men didn't have men who were like brothers. Mm-hmm. And this is what's really interesting is that American adults carve out a lifestyle that is usually hyper-focused on their age and stage peers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'll have children in your life or teens in your life because you had them.
Right.
But you're not inclined to put yourself in a position where you are around men and women who are older than you, younger than you. In 1943, this is a cool study, 1943 on the East Coast, it was a big study. And even though it was in the middle of the war, it was typical of the profile. 80% of married couples grew up within 20 blocks of each other.
Right.
So now think about that. Mm-hmm. If my son meets your daughter, my daughter may have two sisters. Well, all of a sudden with the marriage, she's got four more sisters.
Right.
And new uncles and aunts. And the families were...
And she grew up with this family. She knew mm-hmm. them prior to.
Absolutely. Yeah. And they stayed married and they mm-hmm. stayed together. And they were kind of like subsumed or engulfed into this sure. larger extended family.
Sure.
And that's even true in rural America. Mm-hmm. You know, the farm kids marry farm kids.
Yeah.
And then the families all know each other. So.
I guess it would be the exception would be if someone would go away and meet someone in a foreign country or whatever, another state. That becomes quite the topic of conversation.
That's a great point because one of the things we talk about is like, okay, let's say your kid grows up and your kid goes to college. And so your kid goes to a local college, you mm-hmm. know, and it's terrific. But while they're there, like say you're in the Midwest or something and they go to, Indiana, whatever. And then while they're there, they fall in love with someone from Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
Well, right. that just your point. It's like what happens then is the only time you'll ever meet the family that spawned this thing
mm-hmm.
is at the wedding. And then from there, the young couple moves to Dallas.
Right.
And so now you have three little pods mm-hmm. of family.
A family.
And who gets to have you for Thanksgiving? And, you mm-hmm. know, your mother's crazy, my dad's nuts, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they're in Dallas, they don't think to recreate family, multi-generational family. They don't know how mm-hmm. to do it. And then the families that are back here feel bereft and mm-hmm. you know, so the you know what, this, although we're talking about psychology, the sociology of American life really makes it hard to have a stable lifestyle.
Sure.
In Europe, they move a little bit less than we do, but they don't leave the country.
Right.
You know, if they're in France, you know, you stay in France. If you're mm-hmm. in England, you stay in England. And so
you're in France, you stay in France.
Yeah, yeah. What are you, like, leaving France? What are you doing? No, you don't leave. Oh, wait. Come here, kid. You don't leave France.
Look at me. Don't leave France.
No. No, look, here's the map. We're here. You can go here, you can go here, you can go here, but you got to stay in France. All right, Belgium, maybe Belgium. That's it.
Yeah.
Do you have, who are your friends right now? Let's talk about you, Dr. Will.
Do you hang out with folks?
I was just sitting there trying to think. I have.
Well, I can't imagine being. It's just like it's the same thing I observe with you in your occupation. I assume it's the same way with you. Do people come to you because they want to talk to you, or do they want a diagnosis? People come and talk to you, or they want concert.
I do a better job than Chick in this regard. And part of it is he is so in the public eye
that
it's hard for him to fend off people who want to approach him.
Kind of a big deal.
That doesn't that doesn't happen to me. My name or brand is known more than me.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Okay. Mm-hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. And so plus at my age, I've just learned that I kind of, you know, keep people more.
Why is it? Because I've probably not, you know, great close friends, but I have probably three or four or five more people that I hang out with, not on a consistent basis, but things I can go do with, What am I trying to say?
I'm not real sure.
Than I ever have before.
Yes.
You know, I mean, other than high school, I guess.
Yes.
At this point in my life, I seem to be able to go out and, you know, have lunch with somebody.
No. I have noticed a profound difference in you over the past few years. Profound difference.
Yeah.
And it's relationships, it's disclosure, it's this experience. It's, you know, it's kind of like drawing the lines of separation and boundaries between enjoying the full engagement of your well-deserved notoriety and fame and your job, and then having a private life that gives you what you need.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what, you know, for all of us, I mean, mm-hmm. that's really where the rubber meets the road. I, you know, Sally and I have been married a very long time, and, you know, I'm up there at the university, and my daughter moved from Boston with her family to be nearby. My sister moved from New York to be in Indiana. So we have sort of like a little, mm-hmm. and Sally's from that area. So
little Brooklyn.
Yeah, it's like a little Brooklyn. In fact, I met someone yesterday who said she was hearing me talk about something, and she goes, "Oh yeah, I was raised in Queens, New York," and was like, "Man, we hit it off right away." Yeah,
isn't that strange? I guess it isn't strange. It would be strange if you didn't hit it off with some. Like, it's not that you know they grew up in Ohio or so, but one of my friends, he's almost pretty much the same age, and we talk about things that people who didn't grow up in Central Ohio have no idea what we're talking about.
That's
well, Tom and I do that stupid. There was a convenience store called Lawson's, and they had a jingle. It was primarily a convenience store, kind of like Oberweis. This Cadillac milk place, but they also had convenience store items, and it was kind of a new thing, you know, back in the late 60s when it opened. It was like, oh my, well, this is unbelievable. You don't have to go to a giant grocery store, and mm-hmm. you can just run in here. But they introduced orange juice at one time, and it was the biggest thing ever. And their jingle was, roll on, Big O, get that juice up to Lawson's in 40 hours. Roll on. And if we're having a shit time in the morning, Tom and I will do that off the air and kind of try to, you know, it's just kind of.
Lift your spirits, absolutely, yeah.
I guess there's a camaraderie.
I could do that with my brothers. My beer is Wrangle, the dry beer.
See? See? Do you have a jingle or something like that you remember?
We don't have a jingle, but my brother and I, whenever we're talking about growing up together, we do that. You know the beginning of Henry Lee Summer, Wish I Had a Girl?
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, we do that because we would be on the boat, and if we were relaxing in the middle of the lake on a quiet boat, my dad would slip the cassette in there and turn it up really loud because the speakers were right there and scare us to death. So that's usually
sharing those little kind of coded memories is just, you know, that kind of just breaks the ice. And to tell you the truth, see if this works. When you have family members who are, you know, like, how do I say it? We all have relatives who you'd have to say, if I wasn't related to you, I'd have nothing to do with
Absolutely.
You.
Mm-hmm.
But yet underneath a lot of the stuff that's discordant up here are these memories of mm-hmm. when you were young that you go back to that, mm-hmm. that connect you. And everyone has those people in their mm-hmm. life. And so, I shouldn't say that. People had them in the past, but the problem is now that they don't have them and they don't know how to recreate those kind of friendships.
I have a very interesting situation right now that I'm trying to work through and understand. All of my aunts have played a huge part in my life. I have three aunts, all very different parts, all different, learned very different things from all three of them. And one of them lives less than a mile from me. Mm-hmm. And she's been a career woman. Just worked very hard and had an amazing career and retired and now. But she's also the matriarch because my grandmother died very, very young. And so she kind of just took on that role. And my parents still work and they still, you know, they're still raising children of their own, you know. So I feel like I'm out here on an island sometimes. Like I don't have that... you know, that those parents who came and stayed with you for the first 3 weeks that your children were born and all these things, mm-hmm. because I'm the oldest. Like they're like, oh, she's been raising kids her whole life. She's been helping us raise our kids. Like mm-hmm. she doesn't need us.
Which is true.
And when my daughter got sick, I really didn't know what to do. I immediately thought I can do this myself. I don't need anybody's help, you know, da, da, da. Well, my Aunt Susie jumped right in and was like, what do you need? What are you going to do? I'm here. Text every morning. Mm-hmm. How was her night? Is she okay right now? Do you need me to pick Max up from school? Just all kinds of things. But so these, so in my brain,
Susie offers that from a very sincere back.
Exactly.
I mean, she is
exactly.
very sincere.
So that,
about
that was
her
the
concern.
Hard part of it.
Right.
And then there were times where I was like, Susie, back off. You're my aunt, you know? And then I finally realized, time out. This is coming from a place of concern. She absolutely loves my children like they're her own grandchildren. She's loved me like I was. I mean, I spent so much time with her and my Uncle Danny growing up when I was little before they had children of their own. And I came to the conclusion in understanding that if she were my mother and she made me crazy, that would be appropriate because that's how that works. A mother who is overwhelming will make you crazy. So she gets to be in your business because she loves you so much and she helps you take care of your children. Like, I really had to look at it that way mm-hmm. and understand that it's, I don't know if this is making sense.
No,
that, you know, she gets to be in my business. She gets to drive me nuts because she loves my family so
Bingo.
Much.
That's right.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So it's like sometimes I'm going to be irritated with her and I don't have to feel guilty about it.
So what's underneath that? And what's underneath that is this idea that all of us sort of, I think we have an orientation to say, well, this is your biological, sociological role. You're mm-hmm. an aunt, you're a mother, your father, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, these are the expectations or the boundaries or the liberties that I'm going to allow you. Well, when you don't have them, and if someone wants to come in and be that for you, mother you or father you or uncle you or aunt, mm-hmm. well, hell, let it happen.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's hard to, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? But you're right. But you did. You worked through it. It's like at mm-hmm. first it was like, hey, wait, you're, you know, kind of, you're coming in to me too much. And it's mm-hmm. like, well, yeah, maybe this is good.
Maybe this is good. This is the appropriate thing. And our generations, it has been, I feel like it takes a village to raise a child is
yes.
based on our family because mm-hmm. everybody is involved in everything.
Right.
Yes.
That's right.
Almost exactly. to the point of being slightly unhealthy, but it's okay.
Well, in other words, it's like pick your poison. It's like you want to tip.
Right.
You want to have a tip too much that there mm-hmm. there's too much intrusion in your life that you mm-hmm. have to push back against gently, or no one's there and you can't get them to come in. Believe mm-hmm. me, the second way is harder. It's
right.
harder to get someone to come into your life,
mm-hmm.
And a lot easier to say, no, I just need put a little bit of some boundaries mm-hmm. over here.
Yeah, and we curious to know how my children feel about that, because I didn't have a relationship with my great aunts mm-hmm. and this is what she is to my children.
Right.
And Aunt Karen is also very involved in my life. And we were talking about unconditional love, like feeling that unconditional love. And I was curious, I said, who do you guys feel that from the most? And they immediately said Aunt Karen and Aunt Susie.
Yeah.
That is someone feel it.
They probably don't even have a concept of a great aunt.
That's just their aunt.
Aunt. Yeah,
right.
yeah. They have mm-hmm. no, like, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that there's going to come a point when they're going to go like, what are they to you? You know, like, this is our aunt. What
and
is
that's
she
when
do?
You turn your curse to the people who love you so shit.
And I love you too, or you're going to go to your room.
Yeah. Right. No, so there's, yeah.
So my family, on the other hand.
Right. So many extremes, I know, and it's interesting.
But that's what's interesting is that if, in fact, you happen to be, sadly, in a circumstance, innocently as a kid, where the people who have the role, mother, father, aunt, mm-hmm. uncle, whatever, are incapable of doing it well, choose not to do it well, whatever.
Are self-involved and would rather not.
And you're like, you know, are you hosed? Well, you know what? You are for the period of time
right.
when you have no choice and you have no power.
Until you realize what's going on and can help yourself.
That's right. Right. And then so what does helping yourself mean? See, that's a tricky thing because people think helping yourself is what I was saying at the beginning. People think helping yourself is, oh, I'll get it done myself. No, the way you get it done yourself is to get others to help you get
right.
it done yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
mm-hmm.
yeah, I didn't have a mother who was capable for whatever reason of being there for me. You know, this may sound kind of weird or strange. It's not like you're out there looking for someone to play that role in particular,
mm-hmm.
but sort of you do. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's one of the reasons why becoming involved in activities where you get exposed to multi-generations or whatever
mm-hmm.
is really helpful. You know, but it's not easy. Sometimes people get it through marriage. You know, they get it through, in other words, or their significant other. They kind of like, they wind up being embraced into through a relationship, into exposure to those other, you know, older men or women who can take you on in the best kind of way and learn to love you. But the hard part is that when you come into that with some guardedness or suspicion, very often there are people who are more willing to love you than you're willing to let them love you.
Right. Yes.
You know,
that's very true.
You know, most people know who they love, but they're not 100% sure of who loves them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably true.
You know, and so it's kind of like surprised by this joy that, wow, you know, you really care about me. And if you don't, if you stop pushing back against them, they'll be in your life.
I had someone recently say something to me that was, I was insulted. I was very,
I was going to say inappropriate and awful.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And, yeah, that's usually, I just draw that energy apparently, but, said, oh, you know, I've started dating this guy and he's older. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, and I'm not realizing that she's referencing my relationship with Chick. And she goes, yeah, I know, I have daddy issues too. And I was like, I was very insulted because sure. Daddy issues just sounds gross. Yeah. That phrase sounds gross. And I came to the conclusion because you have to have a defense because obviously that came up a lot when Chick and I were together. Mm-hmm. And I always said, yeah, you know what? I had a really great relationship with my dad and so great that. I don't think it affects. I assume it does, but I didn't know. I never knew how to answer that. How to say no? Actually, I had a really great relationship with my dad. It's fine.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I don't know. So, am I trying to? Was I trying to recreate that great relationship with someone that's older? That I? Oh well, he's older. I trust him.
Yeah,
he's nice.
Mm-hmm.
He listens to me. He thinks I'm smart.
That was,
like
real,
that
was a real mean thing to say.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It was. And
see,
I,
that's interesting because we didn't we. Oh, the poker game podcast we did. I went to play poker at a friend's house and it's always the case. And I don't know why this is really I'm really holding on to what this guy said. And I'm not going to forgive him for what he said. And I'm not because I had. Let him get off. I helped him get off the hook, actually, because we're sitting there and we're talking. And
that odd, yeah.
Yeah, and it was just
isn't
an
it weird
odd
when
remark.
Someone wrongs you and you don't want them to feel bad?
Yeah.
That's exactly the way I felt. Yeah. No, because it was so horrible and so, why would you say that? Because we got introduced and they said, well, how do you know our host? And I said, well, he goes, well, are you in advertising? My friend said, no, he's Chick McGee from the Bob and Tom Show.
Oh, yeah.
And as quick as anything, this guy goes, oh, I don't listen to him anymore. Those guys are, I think they're stupid and awful. And I don't listen to them at all. And I said, well,
I'm standing here. Did he say that out loud?
No.
Do you let him, do you give him a chance to realize what he just said?
I filled it up as fast as I could because I was uncomfortable for everybody, especially me. And I said, you know, some mornings I sit there and I don't listen to him either. You know, I was just trying to ha, 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 ha. But
how did he react after that?
Oblivious.
Mm-hmm. Had no idea he'd said he had insulted me so great. He had no idea. And
was
I'm
everyone
sure,
else when is anyone else uncomfortable there? I'm sure.
Oh yeah, my buddy was like, "What the heck's going on?" I mean, it was. I just don't understand.
It's the famous call the next morning. Hey, sorry about that guy.
I have this superpower is that when I'm upset or I'm no longer wanting to be in the situation that I'm in,
everybody
knows. So yeah, it was about an hour of, because before he said this, it was a decent time. But then it was an hour of, Chick, you okay? Everything? Yeah, everything's fine. And then, I started, boy, 5 o'clock came early this morning. I'm going to have to hit it here. And so sure enough, I left and on the way home, I got a text from the guy going, hey, I hope you had fun. I'm sorry about that guy and comment, you know. And I just said, don't worry about it. It's no big deal. But here it is months later, and I'm still, like, not.
We all chew on that stuff.
Yeah, chewing on it. Yeah, you're exactly right.
Something that's not personal but is personal. Like, you know, he's talking about Bob and Tom, not necessarily talking about you. The girl said daddy issues, which, you know, that obviously is way before you know, right. us.
And right. she's defending deal. Herself because she wants you to know that, yeah, I guess if she's embarrassed. I have, she
I think,
I have
and you know what, how often I find that a girl my age is embarrassed and then she's like, oh, but Jess will be there and then I won't be, we can be embarrassed together. I'm right. not embarrassed.
Yeah.
Get
yeah.
out of here. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If you like him, you love him, whatever.
Yeah, nobody, you don't pick who you, right?
Holding on to those things, obviously, you know, gets to a place where you feel vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know what I mean? You just feel vulnerable.
Oh, why? Well, yeah, I felt, you know, stupid. And this is, yeah, our show's not, you know, Oscar Wilde, but I kind of like it and it's funny. And I would never, what do you do for a living? Well, I work over at, you know, some restaurant. Oh, I never go there. The food's shitty and awful.
What did this guy do for a living, by the way?
I don't even.
It's like an advertising?
Yeah, he might have been. Yeah, maybe something like that.
Oh, yeah. It's like, yeah. No, I understand that you don't listen to the show, but I can understand where you're coming from. It must be a crushing disappointment thinking about your own career.
Right? You know, because that's the thing is that how often are they actually just, it's they're mirroring however they feel about themselves.
Yeah,
like,
of course,
that's almost
yeah.
always what the situation
is. It's so
was.
Hard to realize that, though, when you're.
But also,
do you know
how
many times I hear that from losers?
Right.
Yeah, right.
But how often you
like
see
yourself.
How often you see people feel well, inferior around you. Not
yeah.
because you've made them, but because they're like, oh my gosh, everybody loves this guy. I got to bring him down.
You know, but that's one of my great, what do I want to say here? That's one of my great disappointments in what I do is that I'm not... If you meet me for the first time and it's on a friend basis, I don't get the advantage of finding out about me and what I do. And they already have preconceived notions,
yeah. mm-hmm.
good or bad, what he's like, how he is, what he'll think's funny. What he
are you that Tom
funny.
Fella? Is that who you are?
And I don't really get
yeah.
the honest exchange because they already have an expectation.
Yeah. Well, we talked about this before. It is the weird nature of your life and business
yeah.
that you have to set more vivid fences or boundaries
right.
between
yeah. mm-hmm.
Those people who approach you and you can say, oh yeah, sure, fine, yes. relationships that you actually need. And you don't need a lot of them, but you need some.
Well, and getting back to what that guy said, I'm remembering because I'm, how do I put this? So, well, you know, I don't care. I might have been in a relationship with someone at a point in my life. And she pretty much discounted everything that I have chosen as a profession and didn't see it as – she saw it as just one step up from being the dog-faced boy in the sideshow circus. I mean, you're all you're doing is dick jokes this, dick jokes that. And
mm-hmm.
and she was in advertising.
Oh,
so,
my God.
And not that there's anything wrong with being in advertising. There are some great campaigns, and you know, they're intelligent
but it's
people.
It ain't brain surgery,
but it's,
baby.
Please come and go to Hardee's and buy a hamburger.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And by the way, we'd love to have Hardee's as a sponsor. I don't know why that
would. Oh, but, Frisco but, Burger all
but,
day.
You know, but they, you know, and she really made me feel insignificant and small.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I think I was kind of applying some of that when that guy said that. I mean, mm-hmm. it's...
But it is... Okay, and... For what you do, like you always say, I don't even really know what I do, but I know I do it well. You do.
Well, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
See what I did there?
Yeah. See? Totally discounted what I just said. But when you've met people, excluding your first wife, did they know when you've been in relationships, did they know who you were before you met them?
Yes.
Right. Were they fans?
Depending on where I was in my career.
Oh, okay. Sure. So maybe first two.
So the first two were not really fans. No.
Yeah.
It's really
and
easy.
And they're even less fans. So
it's really easy to minimize or diminish or discount a skill you have that is so highly honed, it comes like as nothing to you.
Right.
And you really underestimate.
That phrase, well, he's making that look easy, you know, and it.
Yeah, well, butthead. That's right, exactly.
And but then you what? There's some quote the epitome of happiness or whatever is blurring the line between work and play. And
sure.
I certainly,
mm-hmm.
I've got the market cornered on that. But
you betcha.
It's not that I'm See, I'm talking about me again with Dr. Will, and I didn't want to do that.
No, it's just a few minutes. I mean, you're in the room.
No, but there's that scene, and I equate everything to. We've got the microphones. We're recording.
We're here. We got it. Say some, my dad's got a barn.
But there's that in Good Will Hunting where Matt Damon is going to the, doing that math problem. He goes, "You see the math? I do that like I read, and that's for someone to, that's that, and I'm thankful for it, and I'm glad I can still do it.
And most people, and a lot of people are still at a place in their career where they're really having to strive and work hard, and it's hard for them. And you happen to come into, follow a career track that has used everything that's natively just natural for you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Stuff I've always done, whether I've been talking into a microphone or not.
Well, when I'm sitting in the show and I'm sitting right where Jess is sitting and I get to look at you and it's like, that's my favorite thing to do. I'm very happy. I'm sitting next to the security of little Christy and I'm looking over at you and enjoying the eye contact and your quips and your wit and all of that stuff. And it just comes so naturally to you that, it's just easy to diminish. My brother's a lawyer. It comes so easy to him after all this time. It's like,
There's a shortcut to, I guess, everything and an ease to...
Hey, I was a stand-up comedian for 20 years. That's like being in Cats. I mean, seriously, it's like... I can remember when I switched over to corporate speaking and my one of my agents at Washington, I've been doing this presentation, which is a mixture of stand-up comedy and then stuff on my book. And it's my act. I mean, I was just doing my act. And I would go from the podium talking about stuff, and it was as rote as a comedy act.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I called this agent. I said, Bob, I've been doing this same speech now for a couple of years. Is it time for me? That's as far as I got. And he went, no. He goes, America hires 1 million speakers a year in various forms, companies, et cetera. We know how to sell you. Keep doing that same speech. You'll never go back to a repeat audience. At the time, I had just done some corporation. And he goes, there are like 5,000 of those corporations. You could do like 50 a year for the next, whatever.
Wow.
So he said, just do it. So the point I'm making to come back to this is I, too, in a lot of my profession, not my psych profession, but in the performer's profession, it's the same thing you're doing. It's just like it just spits out and you do it and you make it energetic and you have fun. When you go out and do shows and you're doing stand-up, it's probably fun because you get to be out in a little bit different way than you are here. But you're great at what you do because you've just been doing it for a long time and know the drill. And most people are envious of that because they think that it's trying.
Too easy, yeah.
And then you're... And then you have to say, actually, what's going to make you feel worse? I do it without any effort whatsoever. I never think about it before I go in. Possibly some thought might come into my mind.
You know what I found, though, in these live shows and stuff, unless Jess is with me and I'm more nervous for her than constant vigilance. I know it. But the less I think about something, especially these live performances, the better I do.
Sure.
I mean, because if I start, because I've tried where are we going to be? Wausau, Wisconsin. Okay, well, what's about Wausau? What's going on there? Mm-hmm. Then I realize as I'm talking to myself, I should be talking to the audience like this. And then that's the act. Because I'd find myself saying something on stage and going, okay, now what was that I was trying to think of? And then you're... everything's derailed and it's not flowing.
And if they're in Wausau, Wisconsin...
That's why I told you that one, you were like nervous about being up because you've got that natural, conversational, very funny, personable. Mm-hmm. People are they feel a warmth coming, and it's. Mm-hmm. I mean, we.
Oh,
did,
thanks.
It was great.
It was great, but
Saturday
I think
night.
Also how you give yourself such a hard time for not being able to meditate or not being in the moment or whatever. You do that. You have to do that for 4.5 hours, 5 days a week. And then you have to get on a stage and do that and host shows. And you are in the moment. There is not a place that you could be more in the moment than you are. You are more in the moment in your life every day than most people are. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize that till I was up there with you the other night. And I was like, I got to stop thinking about everything else.
Yeah,
he and I and our talking and reacting. And that was it.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, I feel like I was that was a form of meditation because you literally cannot be anywhere else.
Yep. It's kind of weird when you tell people that after you've performed for a long time, you can actually do your act effectively, really effectively, mm-hmm. and be thinking about having coffee after the
sure,
the
show. Yeah.
You know, it's
yeah.
like mm-hmm. people don't.
Well, you know, that's like I'll be reading a commercial or something in the morning. Don't tell anybody I told you this, but I'll be reading a commercial, and I, in my head, I'll be going, "Well, I got to take the dogs this afternoon, and I mm-hmm. probably should."
Do you ever think? I mean, do you ever think about me and say, "Do you ever look Dr. Will's shirt?"
Oh, I mean, I hope Dr. Will's okay wherever he is.
I hope no, but it's true. Okay. It's true. You can you know you can just do that.
And then I think, oh, I better get back to reading this commercial. mm-hmm. But I never stopped. Mm-hmm. So, I don't. Yeah. So what do we do about our nation as a whole? There you go. Go.
Well, boy. I mean,
the more
it's hard not to be discouraged.
It is, but it,
everything
I, but I always,
is everywhere.
But I think, yeah, but concerning yourself with how everyone else is going to behave is just
you got to be
crazy.
You got to be optimistic.
Yeah,
you know what?
I can only be the best I can be. That's the only
that's
thing
right.
I can help.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right.
I can choose to be happy and the best yep. person I can be and yep. move forward.
Yeah, let love in, let love out.
Bingo.
Right.
That's all you got to
right.
do.
Exactly. Remember that positive energy we had,
mm-hmm.
And it was just we were out of the track on carb day, and we're just like, you know.
Oh yeah.
Just like sailing along yep. and normally be, oh gosh.
That's what we were. We were both trying to practice not being dreadful of like awful drunk people coming up to us. And right. I was like, let's just be open to everything
open
that
heart.
Comes.
Open heart.
And it may have
and
been,
it, really did make
it may have been the Bloody Marys, but we really did well. I was really
yep.
proud of us.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was great. It was the best
put
carb
love
day
out,
ever.
It comes right back to you.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yep. You know, even people who are disturbed respond usually to love.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What are you saying?
See, there's that mind.
Yeah.
There's that mind.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, Doc. You've got your own podcast. It's at drwill.com.
Yes, and it's going to grow. As a matter of fact, I'm going to add another one, which
ooh.
Is interesting. Yeah, I'm going to add a refrigerator rights one and
ooh.
Then the mental health
and you,
one. So.
And can people get your the TV Land stuff there and your refrigerator
yes,
rights book?
Yes,
and
yes.
Things
just
like
go
that.
To Dr. Will and you know, and just and stay tuned and just sit down and wait.
Mm. just like wait it, it out.
Just wait it out. It's coming by the end of the summer.
You're
awesome.
Right it is.
Okay. Love you guys.
Thank you, Doc.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jess.
You're welcome.
This has been the Off Air Podcast. We'll talk to you next time. Thanks for downloading us.
Rusty rays of light shine down on his face. While the blood from the night wound fills the place. Back up the bag, let's get out of here. While the sirens start to fill the air. I'm all in the struggle and the body's still. This is only some kind of bad dream. Don't worry, baby, I'll figure out something. Give him a slip, they won't be back in the center. Slip him a Mickey and give him a finger. I had him looking for a ringer, but I had no idea the DEA was using the singer. But it's all right, cause I love you, baby. It's all right, cause I love you, girl. It's all right, cause I love you, baby.
You ready? You ready? Let's roll.
It's all right, cause I love you, baby. It's all right, cause I love you, girl. It's all right, cause I love you, baby.